Do you have a friend who is part of a multi-level marketing company? Have they changed? Well, today on the show, we are going to talk to a multi-level marketing survivor. And I don't use that term lightly. David Pride was sponsored into an MLM at the tender age of just 15 years old. 1 year later, his new family realized that he had a gift for speaking on stage, and he became a poster boy for the organization. In the next 3 years, he would go on to recruit more than 150 new people into the company. He would spend a total of 13 years with this organization, and getting out was pure hell. It was so bad that he spent 3 years in therapy after that to reprogram his brain after leaving the MLM world. For the first time ever, he's going to share his story, how it all started, how much he made, and it will shock you, and how everyone abandoned him when he left. This is my interview with David Pride.
Welcome to the Mostly Money Podcast with your host, Preet Banerjee.
This is Mostly Money, and I am your host, Preet Banerjee. One small note before we get started. As you know, I prefer to speak with guests live. However, during the coronavirus pandemic, this is no longer really possible. I used some new software to capture the remote recording of David, but unfortunately, it crapped out early into the interview, and instead of using his nice microphone, it seemed to have switched to using his laptop microphone instead. So you'll hear an abrupt change in David's audio quality at about, 5 minutes or so into the interview. My apologies. David Pride is a professional speaker whose motivational seminars about overcoming long seasons of challenge and setback have taken him across the country and around the world. He is the founder and chief relationships officer of Social Impressions, a social media marketing agency that specializes in providing strategic and effective marketing advice to companies and political organizations around the world. David serves on the advisory board of the Journal of the North Atlantic, a publication created for regional and global stakeholders in the North Atlantic and Arctic region. He is also on the board of BioQuest Solutions, a science-based environmental services firm that empowers its clients with the means to help mend the planet and serve their communities in a sustainable and responsible way. You can find David online at davidpridespeaks.com. Or on social media as @DavidAPride. David, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
No, it's my pleasure. We were just chatting before we started recording about how this is the first time you've really talked openly about your experiences in a multi-level marketing organization. And it's kind of scary, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it goes against everything I believe, or was told to believe, at least.
Yeah, and there's so many things that I want to talk to you about, but let's just get down to your story first, and then we can sort of pick away at it. So you were part of one of the oldest and most successful multi-level marketing companies in history, and we're not going to name any names, but after 13 years, you ended up in 3 years of therapy. Tell us your story.
Yeah. So I was introduced to this business when I was 15 years old. The way it all kind of started, my origin story was, I remember I was sitting, obviously I was living in my parents' house, I was 15, and I was in bed, and my brother Tom came running into my bedroom, and my brother Tom was about 13 years older than me, and he sits at the end of my bed, and he looks at me and he says, "David, you're never going to believe what I just heard about." I was like, okay. And I can't imagine what it is. At 15, there's all kinds of cool things he could have just heard about. And he goes, "I just saw a way that you and I can partner and make it so mom and dad never have to work again." And I was like, okay, this sounds awesome. You know, but first off, the first thing in my adolescent brain was, oh, cool, I get to partner with my brother Tom on something. You know, my older brother, get to spend more time with him. This will be rad. And then he began what we refer to as showing me the plan. You know, and he sat down and began to draw these circles on a notebook. In fact, I still have it. He would drew the circles out on my bed and began to explain to me about this business opportunity that was happening, that he was fortunate enough to have met these really successful guys who were coming through town, and they spotted him as a real go-getter. And he decided he was going to get involved, and he was told to go and find other people who had a similar personality to his, who were motivated, who might be interested in making money. And he came to me as kind of a person to practice the plan on. And so he began showing it to me. And I've always been interested in entrepreneurship and interested in new ways to make money. And so I was immediately kind of fired up about it. And at the time with this organization, you couldn't sign up when you were 15. You could sign up when you were 15, and then as long as you had an adult co-sign who was 18 or older, and then mm-hmm. when you hit 18, you can buy your business back from the person who co-signed. And so mm-hmm. luckily, I have three older brothers. And so Tom told me about it. The other brother didn't want to get in. And so I went back to my brother Mike, and I said, look, will you be my co-sign so I can join this opportunity and sign this contract? And when I'm 18, I'll buy this business back from you for $1. And it'll be the dumbest sale you ever make in your life. You know, and I kind of pounded my chest and thought about how much smarter I am than my other two brothers who weren't going to take an opportunity of this $1 million business. And we got started. And it was life-changing, quite literally. It meant that immediately I was engulfed in what we referred to as the system. And the system consists of books, tapes, conferences, and major conferences, and constant mentorship. And so at 15 years old, my brother finished showing me the program. We did all the paperwork. I bought what was called a kit, which was, you know, this box of products, and it had a big thick 3-ring binder and cassette tapes from the founders of the company explaining the history and the magic of free enterprise and compassionate capitalism and how my life was going to change. And I 100% believed it, 100% bought in. And even on a deeper level, it was almost a spiritual connection of, oh my gosh, look what God has placed in my life. I'm going to be able to change other people's lives now too, because what better way to help people than to teach them how to make money?
My brother had built this dream in me that we were going to go out together and change people's lives and share with them this opportunity that had so much more to do with life and their future and their family's future. And it was so much more than just going out and selling soap and vitamins and anything you eat, drink, spit, flush, or swallow. You know, it was so much
was that
more
the product
than
lineup? Was that oh, the yeah. product lineup?
Yes. Yeah, anything you eat, drink, spit, flush, or swallow, you can now buy online and get paid for doing it. And so, but this was prior to the internet even. That's how long ago this was, before the website launched. And so, so we got, you know, my brother and I were kind of like this dynamic duo. My brother Tom is one of the best salesmen that I've ever seen in my life. He's also just a fantastic people person, and he's a great closer. And so he's a fun guy to hang out with and be around, and which is part of the magic of these types of businesses and communities and cults, is that, you know, you get an opportunity to be around people that you respect, and you earn their respect by doing what they're doing. You know, and mm-hmm. you know, if you're not doing what they're doing, then you're not earning their respect, and you're kind of disrespecting their time. And so very quickly I was taught terms to kind of live by. They kind of became our motto, of one of which was edification, which meant, you know, you're always edifying your upline, which is in a multi-level marketing business, there's lots of different terms for it. But in our case, upline meant the people who registered before me, or the people who registered the people who registered me. Mm-hmm. And the saying was, you know, you always edify your upline. So everywhere you go, whenever you meet someone, if you're talking about someone in your upline, it's positive, and it's only ever positive. And so, you know, if I met you, say I was hanging out at Barnes and Noble and you were looking at, you know, in the business book section, and I was there stalking new prospects, as I would refer to them, like I did every single night of my life, you know, you might come up and I would probably say something to you like, oh, wow, you're a fan of Robert Kiyosaki also? Man, I just read that Cash Flow Quadrant book. It blew my mind. I couldn't believe the concept. In fact, you know, this is wild. but I'm working with a group of guys from down the street. Man, we're looking for a few key people who might be interested in making the next $3,000 to $5,000 a month in the next 6 to 18 months. I'm not sure if you're going to qualify, but what I'd be willing to do is sit down with you in the next couple of days, go over a short program with you. And if it looks like you make sense for our team, I'd be happy to introduce you to this other guy I know. You wouldn't believe what he's doing.
And you were 15 with a pitch like that. I mean, that's pretty slick for a 15-year-old.
Yes, I know. So and that's like slickness is a testament to the system, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're taught immediately. You listen to, back then it was tapes and it became CDs, but back then it was you listen to a tape a day at least. You read at least a book a month from the system. And so at 15 years old, I was listening to cassette tapes, by the great thinkers of prosperity thinking and prosperity wealth and sharing all their ways to speak it and make it appear. And on top of that, I was reading books like How to Win Friends and Influence People, The Magic of Thinking Big, and all these financial books. And so I could hold tea with just about any money guy, if they want to pepper me with questions about the industry, because I knew all the answers. And it taught me these amazing people skills so that I could really get in anything out of anybody. But more importantly, it taught me how to take someone that I just met at the mall, or I just met at church, or somebody walked by me with a fancy tie on, which told me they're success minded. It taught me how to go from that to getting their phone number to sitting down with them and their wife, 3 days later for an hour at their dinner table with my dad waiting in the car to drive me back home because he wasn't part of the business.
Man, that's wild. Okay. So, you start at 15 and it sounds emblematic of a lot of MLM organizations where a lot of focus is on the process and not as much really on the products. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like secondary. It's like, well, whatever the product is, we're going to sell it. Here's right. The system, and we want you to find people downstream to you. You're going to report to people upstream to you, which is where you get this idea of the pyramidal structure, the pyramid. So let's fast forward a little bit. So how long were you with the organization in total?
Yeah, so I got involved at 15, and I formally resigned and gave up the rights to my organization when I was 33.
And was this your full-time endeavor, or was this the only thing that you did during those times?
No. And so I always had a job because I never was making enough money for it to be a full-time thing. But I was certainly working the full-time hours. And so for instance, once I got out of high school and I was still, quote, building the business, then it came time to make decisions about college. And of course, you sit down with your mentorship team. And one of the scariest things for anybody in an MLM to hear from their downline is, I'm thinking about going to college out of state, or we're thinking about moving, because the moment you get away from your community, you're now in danger. And that's one of the three things in my mind that make up a cult, which is what the business that I was involved with was, is that one is we have this strict set of beliefs that you adhere to these and you make sure anybody in your community adheres to them also. Otherwise, you don't be around them anymore, because it's not because they're bad people is what we'd tell you. It's because they don't have a big enough dream. They don't care about your parents' freedom like you do. They don't care about becoming financially successful as much as you do. So why would you dilute yourself by hanging around with people who don't think the way that you do? And then the second thing that they do is they begin a slow removal from your organic community. So I got involved at 15 and I had middle school friends. I wasn't even high school yet. I had middle school friends. I had some high school friends. I had church friends and I had sports teams I was involved with. But as I got to senior year in high school, I didn't have sports teams because sports were for losers. They're for lazy people who didn't want to build a business, right? Those were for all those kids that said no to getting involved in my organization because their dream isn't big enough. They think they're going to go to college and get a job. And we all know job is just over broke and no one wants that. And so what happens is this slow removal from society so that you're only surrounded by like-minded success thinking people, because you don't want to be in danger, and it's total 100% devotion. And so you get to a point where you're coached into realizing how much smarter you are than other people, how much more motivated you are than other people, and how people who might say something negative or make fun of you or not believe in your dream, those are toxic, dangerous people to be around because they don't understand the opportunity that you're rolling with. And so that was, you know, what's odd about it is when you're involved is that it all feels right. It all feels comfortable and perfect. And in my life, that community was kind of the family I always wanted. It was like the family that always believed in me as long as my dreams were about the business. Like they always believed in my business. They always called me to see how I was doing. You know, they'd call me at 1 a.m. to go out and have a cup of coffee with some rich guy in his, you know, outdated Cadillac. And they'd, you know, they'd do things like this, which always made me feel so special. Yeah, it always made me feel like a part of a community.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, they have this system that helps you become a better seller. And I'm sure that, you know, as you get into the system, they have a different system for how to keep people downstream from you super happy and productive.
Right.
And they were just telling you everything that they know people respond to keep you happy and motivated. And it does sound like a lot of brainwashing, right? And as you mentioned, there's so many cult-like aspects to it where you have this community, you're different than everyone else. You probably alienated some people in your life before you joined. Yeah. So tell me about some of those alienations. How did they happen? What were the results? Did you ever reconnect with people that you lost as you went through this journey?
Yeah. So they happened all the time. But you know, we would refer to it as, you know, trimming the fat, you know, and so it never happened by accident is one point I think that's important for people to realize, especially if someone's listening who's involved with something like this, is it never happened by accident because it was always kind of strategic. So what I mean by that is I might be doing what we would refer to as a house meeting where I have a whiteboard set up and I'm showing the circles and there's 10 people in a living room someplace. And then Uncle Frank out in the kitchen, well, he's always negative. And Uncle Frank, you know, he's never been that bright anyhow. You know, he's never had a dream. Look at what he does for work. And the understanding would be, well, yeah, Dave, you know, Uncle Frank clearly isn't a guy you need to be around. You know, like he doesn't understand your dream. He's not a safe person to be around. And in my personal life, what that looked like was as I graduated college and got into working a normal job, I was working for a large newspaper as a marketing director. And what it meant was you don't have friends at work because, you know, if they're not in your business, you don't have time for them after work. And I would go in and I would work from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. I would come home and then I would hop in the car by 6 p.m. and I'd be out till midnight every single night, 7 days a week, showing the program. And anybody who couldn't cheer me on or at least, you know, add fuel to my fire, they were detracting from my life. They were not people who added value anymore. And that's what I was taught. And so there were several family members that I was no longer really allowed or promoted to be around. You know, the majority of my high school friends, I have a yearbook, in fact, where I went through and the goal from my mentors told me is you need to show this business to every single person in your high school. There's going to be 332 graduating seniors. Of that, we know that you should be able to find four leaders. And of that, we should be able to build three good organizations underneath them. And so I went through and I put X's through every single one of the high school yearbook photos as I contacted their parents and showed their parents the plan and then tried to see who would get in and recruited, you know, dozens of people throughout my high school career. I mean, in fact, if you were to look at my yearbook photo now, my little message underneath it is a pitch for the business that I was involved with my ID number. So wow. If someone changed their mind 10 years later, they could still go in and register. And so it was a obvious and strategic paring down of people that aren't safe to be around because they don't understand my advanced level of dreaming and my thinking and the sacrifices I'm going to make for my family. And more importantly, my kids' family and their kids' family and the generational wealth that I'm creating.
When did the illusions of this dream start to turn into a nightmare?
So it was really, really slow. My wife and I, we got married pretty quickly. I met my wife and then we got engaged about 3 months later. And then we got married about 6 months after that. That was completely due to our business.
Was she a part of the organization as well?
Oh, anybody who wanted to go on a second date was part of the organization. And so if you didn't want to, literally, if I took you out on a date in high school or in college, we would go to some place like Romano's Macaroni Grill so I could draw the plan on the table on their little, you know, the paper table mats. And if you said no by the end of it, I'd either ditch you or the next stop would just be dropping you off at home. Because this girl, you have to be able to support my dream. You know, you have to. And if you can't be a part of it, you can't be in my life because you're just going to slow me down. And so my wife kind of bought into it a little bit. She never fully took it like hook, line, and sinker like I did, but she immediately supported me and could understand the value in it. And she, more importantly, knew how important this family was to me that I was a part of. And so we got married very quickly. And shortly after that, she came down with a chronic illness, with chronic pancreatitis. And so she was sick for a long time after that. And that's when I begin to see some holes in the armor. The first thing I noticed was that the people above me in my upline weren't advancing. Like they weren't, their business wasn't getting any bigger. And what I was noticing is we'd have these monthly conferences and I would go to the conference and I'd have my 25 or 30 people with me. But the guy above me, like my direct sponsor, like I was basically his entire business other than his son. And so like it was me and his son and he was never advancing and he never quit his job. He never, you know, showed me big $20,000 bonus checks. He never did anything that we talked about. And on top of that, a major ethical issue I ran into is at a young age, the organization figured out I was a gifted speaker and that I could, you know, I could rap with anybody on stage. And so they started putting me on stages at 16, 17 years old, showing this business plan. And by the time I was, you know, in my 20s, I was showing the program around New England every Wednesday night and every Friday night in a hotel room, you know, showing people how to build this business, how to contact, show the plan, follow up, get them started, and showing them how to do this one-on-one all the time. And I used to make this comment to my upline, and I'd say, you know, sometimes I feel weird about this because I'm not making any money, but yet I'm teaching everybody in the crowd how to make $3,000 to $5,000 a month in the next 6 to 18 months, but I've never made $3,000 in a year.
Right.
This feels weird. And the answer was always, you're the one holding the mic. That means they're going to believe you.
Wow.
And then the next step would always be, and Dave, come on, success isn't about you. It's about what our team's going to do for them. So let's not base where you're at to predict where you're going. We know where you're going. God has a plan for what he's doing in your business. That's why you've got this gift. That's how you found this. This is all meant to be, Dave. This is all part of it. You know, David, there's a seed time, there's a progression time, and then there's a harvest time. And right now we're just out there in the field tilling the land. And so I began to see these holes in the armor of my team not advancing, of people having the same financial struggles that my wife and I had, which was weird because everybody's supposed to be making, you know, $6,000-$7,000 a month at least. And then as I began to go to and be more involved with the upline above me, as my business grew, meaning the amount of people I recruited, not the amount of money I was making, but as my business grew, I got to spend more time with the real leaders at the top who were arguably making decent, you know, six-figure incomes. And I began to learn that, you know, David, yeah, there's the business side of it where, yeah, you can go out and show the plan and get people in and you'll make money by the products they buy and their friends buy. But where the real money is made, David, is in the tools. And that's why it's so important. You get everybody signing up for their book of the month, their CD of the week. You know, we got to get them at the monthly conferences. You get bonus on all these things when you're a certain level on the bonus chart. And I began to realize, like, hold on, there's a whole other side of this income in this industry that we don't talk about. And so like we talk about, you can make all this money by selling these products to your friends and their friends. But what people don't realize is their income is matched or doubled by those CDs they're selling you every single time you see them.
Mm-hmm. And that is one of the major delineators between companies that are, you know, over the line. And it seems to be when the proportion of income is leaning more towards the recruitment side and the income you get from recruiting into the structure as opposed to the actual products. Because there are, you know, with any corporation, there is a pyramidal structure, right? There is someone at the top, you've got middle-level managers and whatnot, and you've got the worker bees at the bottom. That's pretty standard.
Right.
And so a lot of people say, hey, every company is a pyramid. Well, no, that's not what is meant by, you know, the ones that are on the shadier end of the spectrum. It's really when the product is not as important as the processes and the recruitment. And so the people who tend to make the money tend to be the ones who recruit a lot of people. Right. And that can only happen for so many layers. And so it's really the people who get in at the beginning are the ones who are making all the money, and everyone else is just sort of, you know, essentially a worker bee. Even though it's sold as being, oh, be your own boss, you're not your own boss. You're right. You're a part of this big machine, a well-oiled big machine that will steamroll people. Let's talk a little bit about compensation. So you talked about how much time you were putting into this business. It was like you had two full-time jobs. You had your real job, which was paying the bills, and then you had probably as much, if not more, time spent on this business. And what is the single biggest check you ever got for a month during the 13 years that you were in this organization?
One month, when we had about 115 people in our organization, we got a check for $615.
That was your biggest check in 13 years?
Yes. For the first 10 years in the business, I never had to file a tax return because I didn't make enough income for it to be reportable.
Wow.
Like, I remember having a party the first time that the corporation sent me one of those file your extra income thing because you made over $1,000. I remember when that happened and calling my upline and be like, oh man, I got my believer's pin right here. Like, you can't believe this. Like, I'm going to have to file taxes on this income now. You know, like, and because I had made like $1,200 that year.
Wow.
And it was something to be celebrated, which is one of the keys to this industry that people look over, because the people on the outside that are above you are really loving, amazing people who are ear deep in the same stuff that we all are in. And so how do you keep people motivated who aren't making any money, who are spending all their time in this, who are sacrificing their family, who are sacrificing travel, who are skipping weddings, who are skipping college, who are dropping out of college? Well, you celebrate everything. And so if you ever go to something where it's referred to as like an open opportunity meeting, which is what we would call them, you know, at the end, we might have what's called a night owl, which is the meeting that started at like 10 or 10:30 at night, the meeting after the meeting where the real meat and potatoes are for the guys who are out there actually doing it. And that's where we would recognize. We'd say, all right, come on, guys, you know, let's clap for, you know, we got Frank here in the front row. You know, congratulations to Frank. Frank brought two people with him tonight. All right, now let's bring up Linda. Linda, congratulations. Linda sold two lipsticks this month. And we would clap like they were getting a $400,000 check. And then, in fact, their two lipsticks they might have made 85 cents off of, minus the mileage that they spent to drive and drop it off. And so, but when you program people to get addicted to those endorphins that are shooting off in your brain every single time you do something, you have such power over them, and they program you to become addicted to suffering. So you like, the suffer is the dream. The suffering is the business. The suffering is the proof that you're chasing your dream. And so if you're having trouble paying your bills, man, that's a good thing, because that's going to add to your story later. If you're, you know, if you lost all your friends, man, that's great, because that's just making way for all the new friends you're going to make. And think of the lives you're going to touch when you share your story about skipping your brother's wedding so you could come to this conference this weekend. And that's how you program people. You celebrate these little teeny tiny victories that actually don't mean anything. And then you change how they look at suffering, and you change how they look at failure to realize, no, all these failures, these are what make up this business. It's not little tiny victories here and there. No, it's all these failures. And so when you show the plan to someone and they say no, that's why you drive home and you call your upline on your $16.95 voicemail system that's private to only people in the business. And you say, my God, I just left Susie's house and her husband, boy, he's a doctor. Boy, well, have fun working your whole life. You know, like, losers work all the time. You like getting interrupted. Apparently, you know, Dr. Frank, his wife doesn't matter enough to him to see an opportunity when it's in front of him. You know, and we would celebrate these losses, and it programs your brain to say, oh, a loss is a success. A loss is is good. And I'm going to continue losing because that's actually winning. It's like, it's almost like listening to Donald Trump. You're like, everything is bad. No, this is actually good. The virus is just going to go away. You know, I'm not a racist. You're like ignorant, stupid things that no one with a brain would ever say that only our president does. And so, who also endorses multiple MLMs, but anyhow, and so they program you to not have a realistic or well-defined version of goal setting and achievement. You lose your definition of achievement. Achievement suddenly becomes, you know, what happens when things go wrong. Your achievement is that I showed the plan to 15 people this month and all of them said no. And, you know, I barely had enough money to put gas in the tank. Boy, that's something to celebrate, David. Look at that victory.
Yeah, but this is unbelievable. Thank you so much for sharing all this stuff. So you were, I would assume, a high performer.
Yes.
And the biggest check you ever received in a month was 600 and change. Mm-hmm. What about the average person who's in these organizations? I imagine that they would be making a lot less than you. And if anything, people were paying to be a part of this. They weren't making money. They were probably out of pocket.
Right. Yes. So according to the internet, I actually Googled it before just to find out what the corporation that I worked with was saying is the average income that they claim, including the largest distributors, is about $190 a month when you divide it out amongst all the distributors. So that includes the really highly, highly paid guys and then the people who are just getting in. In my organization, I had built a group to a point where with the company I was involved with, we had two terms. One was called width, and that meant those were people you directly sponsored. And then mm-hmm. the other term was depth, which means I sponsored you, you introduced me to Jim, and then we sponsored Timmy, and Timmy's three in depth of me. And so mm-hmm. my organization, I had built each different person's considered a leg. And so I had built five legs, and one of my largest legs was about 35 deep. Of people. And the largest check I know happening down there, as far as a commission check, maybe somebody made $300. But that would definitely be before they subtract what they're paying in products every month. You could make money if you went out and sold products to like corporations, if you convinced them that you know, like they want to switch their soap distributor to your business and you went like a B2B approach, you could. Mm-hmm. generate some income that way. But that's not promoted at all because that doesn't add to the structure of your business, right? That's only profit. Nobody cares about profit. We want to build community. And so, the most successful distributors in my business, we had a guy who took it and built it into Hong Kong and, a really, really sharp young man. But I think he and his wife might've made maybe $200-$300 one month. And they were spending just as much time as I was. During my peak, I was showing the plan 25 to 35 times a month. And every single night I didn't have a plan booked, I was at a mall or a grocery store or someplace meeting new people and striking up conversations with people about their shirt, their tie, their earrings. I would literally take people in. What I was most well known for was called the cold contact. And where I would take a group of guys with me to the main mall and I would say, look, I want you to point to anybody in this mall and I will get their name and phone number for you. And so somebody would walk by and maybe he'd have a suit on. And so they'd say, oh, David, go get him. And so I'd follow this guy through the mall and I'd wait for the perfect opportunity when he stops at Sears to look at a pair of sneakers or something. And then whatever he's doing, I'd strike up a conversation and we'd start building that relationship of, hey, I noticed you're looking at running shoes. Are you jog often? Oh, no, I don't jog. Oh, geez, you got that in common. Neither do I. That's great. So you're from around here? Yeah, I live down. Oh, man, this is wild. I don't know. Like, I'm just shooting from the hip here. I could be completely wrong. But I'm working with some guys down the street. We're trying to put together this business and looking for a few sharp, go-getter-minded type people. If I had a way that I could teach you how to make another $3,000 or $4,000 a month in the next 6 to 18 months, does that sound like something that might make a difference in your life? And we'd go from there.
Wow. Okay. How did you get out?
Well, bluntly, I called and resigned. But the way that I got out, what led to us exiting the corporation is my wife and I had just moved back from South Carolina. We were told to move to South from Maine to South Carolina to be closer to some of the largest leaders in our business. And so there was like a mecca that happened within our organization where we convinced, 10 or 12 people to drop out of college to move to South Carolina or North Carolina. And my upline eventually moved there. And my doctor thought warmer weather might be better for my wife's health. And so we moved to South Carolina for a year. And then things didn't work out the way we planned. And so we moved back to Maine. We got back to Maine right at the same time that my direct sponsor was finally moving to North Carolina to be closer to the real leaders of the business. And so we started renting his home from him. And then that's when we began to really be taking some time away from the business, kind of defragmenting from it, from the massive expense of being involved in a business, like the hundreds of thousands of dollars and of products and tools that we had purchased as a couple in the past 10 years is astronomical. You would not believe the amount of money. And we began to realize it a little bit. And so finally we found a new house to rent. And when we found a new place to rent, my sponsor became really aggressive because he needed that income from this house he was renting us. And we knew the house was for sale. And so we didn't want to keep renting when the house could be sold out from underneath us at any point. But we didn't realize he was in such financial trouble because he's supposed to be this big, wealthy, big guy in my business making $5,000-$6,000 a month. And so we moved across town and he came back to Maine to the house that we were renting. He literally started texting me angry messages about, you don't realize what you're doing to me by moving out of my house. You don't realize stuff. And at the time I was working on a project, a dream project with a legitimate mentor of mine on a luxury hotel property we were building on the lake in Maine. And my sponsor from the business said to me, David, I know your mentor and I know everything about you. I can call him and ruin your business deal in a minute if I want to. And so he began calling my employers, my mentors, and talking trash about me. Went to his house and he started doing some renovations. They ripped up all the carpet and then went on Facebook and said, look what David and Aaron Pride did to my house. And they made it look as if we ripped up all the carpet. Wow, and so my wife responded publicly. And then like the final straw was he texted me and said, look, you need to learn how to get control of your wife. That's the last word any man says to anybody or any self-respecting woman. It was extremely hard because I thought my inactivity would be proof enough that I wasn't involved anymore, but it became an ethical issue because I had so many people still in my organization that knew I was still involved that I began to feel really bad when my, $37 check would come. Because I knew people in my group still thought I was their upline and I still believed in this and that they could still call me and get mentorship when these guys were like, senior year in college, taking tons of time away from their studies to build the business, as we said, or family people who are skipping out on their kids' birthdays and all these other things because of me, because of what we taught them. And so I called the corporation and officially resigned. And that's what we thought was the end of it. And to make a long story short, we were officially resigned, which means that my business was absorbed by my older brother, who still has a number. He's not involved anymore, but he still has an IBO number, they call them. And we stepped away from the business for about a year. And at the same time, a guy from my group's father passed away. And all of our family that we referred to as family had moved to North Carolina. And this guy in my group was just me and him in Maine. And the only person I knew about who still knew my friend and I knew would care about it was someone from our upline who lived on the lake, one of the big, big, rich, like really actually rich people. And I called him up and said, hey, look, this person's dad died. The funeral's on Wednesday. I know we don't really talk anymore, but it'd be great if you could show up. It'd mean a lot to him. Because part of that business is even though you exit, you always come back to it. It's like a girlfriend that you've been loved with that you never fully got over because you always want to find a way. Like, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I didn't do something right. Maybe I should reconnect. So I called this guy. He wound up coming out. And then, of course, he struck up a conversation with me of, well, what are you doing now? I see you're not involved in business anymore. But boy, I'm so glad we got reconnected, David. And long story short, he eventually tried to re-recruit me into the business. This is 2 years ago. Tried to re-recruit me into the business, masked it as a personal friendship, which was even harder for me to understand. Would come to my house as a friend to see, oh, you bought a new house. And then the conversation would slowly slide back into what's going on with that operation. I had introduced him to a few of my speaker friends so that I could speak at his conferences, because some of them have expertise in that industry. And all of a sudden, he kind of went silent because we never re-signed up. And then I got a call from him actually just 6 months ago. And he called me to see what was going on. And then he says to me, you know, Dave, I know we haven't talked in a while, but, you know, my daughter needs a place to live right now. And I don't know if an extra $500 or $600 a month would make a difference in your life. But if you wouldn't mind putting my 22-year-old daughter up in your guest room, it'd sure mean a lot to me. And I'm like, this is why you called back. And so that was the structure of these businesses that people don't understand is you're always getting used. No matter how much you feel loved, you're always getting used. And what's even more sad about it is you actually love these people. Like, I had cancer when I was 19 years old. You want to know some of the first people that showed up at my house was guys from my upline. Showed up at my house, threw me in their car, took me out on their boat in the lake and talked about how great life was going to be when I survived this and how fortunate I was to have cancer because now I could sponsor other cancer patients. I could now relate with other cancer patients and they're going to want to get in my business to see, you know, how much freedom that this business will create for me. They'd have me show the plan the night after treatments. I'd be green showing the plan because I was inspirational. I had cancer. So of course they want the cancer survivor on stage, even though I was going through treatments, 6 months of treatments, 12 weeks of radiation, you know, still up on stage. And so what I'm trying to say is that the love of the community is so real. And it's part of the reason why it hurts so bad to even be open about it when I'm talking with you right now is you feel like you're turning your back on these people who really loved you, but they didn't. Like they actually didn't. If you weren't involved in the business, they didn't. And that's the rule. If you get out, you're out. You don't mess with the family, you're out. So
how long did it take you to realize that they didn't actually love you? Was that a result of the years of therapy afterwards?
I still struggle with it. I feel bad for even telling the story that I just told about one of them reaching out to me. Because my fear is, oh my God, he's going to hear this interview. He's going to be so mad at me. He's going to call me and say, David, I thought we had a friendship beyond this business. I can't believe you do. And that's that mental manipulation that still happens because what's bred into you is you want their approval because you get so used to being celebrated for selling a $6 thing of lipstick that you thrive off that. And I've been out of that industry now for 4.5 years or so. And I still struggle with being honest with people because that business, it taught me to be a liar. It taught me to exaggerate. When I started my own professional speaking career, I must have sat down with my parents to verify stories about my mom's life 5 or 6 times because I was so scared I was going to stand on stage and lie again. Because I was so used to standing on stage and lying and thinking, oh, it's not really lying because it's positively affecting these people's lives. And so it gets bred into you, this acceptance of untruths and things that shouldn't be celebrated that are. And so I still see counseling and I oftentimes I'll be out with my wife and we might be talking to a waiter who's a sharp guy. And all of a sudden, without even realizing it, I'll start saying to him, boy, so what else do you know? Like, is this what you're gonna do for the rest of your life? Or are you open to other ideas? And I won't even realize I'm saying it. Right. But I'll begin leading them down the prospect path.
Wow. I want to leave with some advice for listeners. There might be a few people who are listening who are maybe have been approached by an MLM, one of the shadier ones, or there's probably some people who know someone definitely who is part of one. And what is your advice first to people to avoid getting caught up in something like this? And then also for the people who know someone that they love, a friend, family member, who is getting wrapped up into these schemes, what can you tell them? Mm.
So for the people who are, you know, may know someone that is wrapped up in this, it's really going to be a challenge to talk with them and help them see the light, you know, because you have to realize if the fact that you see what's wrong with what they're doing means that you are not a safe person for them to take advice from. So for you to go to them and say, dude, come on, look, you're out 5 or 6 nights a week doing this thing. You're not making any money. You're filling your gas tank all the time. Your kids are home alone. Your wife's mad at you. Your wife's threatened to leave if you don't quit. What don't you see about this? No, they see all that and they celebrate it. So the best thing you can do is just be there for them and be honest with them and listen to them. But if you attack them or come at them with numbers, numbers do not matter. So do not come to them with numbers of, well, how much is your check or how much is your upline? Nobody shows checks because why? Well, if I told you how much money I was making, you wouldn't even believe it. If I told you how much money I was making, you know what? It doesn't really matter. It's all about how much money you want to be making. And so, but if you're there for them, at some point, they're going to hit the bottom and realize, oh my God, like this, it's been 10 years and I didn't even, haven't done anything. It's been 10 years and all I've done is spend thousands of dollars of my money and missed hundreds of nights with my family. I do not know a safe way to help someone exit one of these businesses because it's such a brainwashing process that they have something has to happen where they realize, oh my gosh, this is out of control. I just talked with someone the other day who heard about my story with the organization, and he said, man, he goes, I was in for 14 years and it took my wife handing me divorce papers before I finally left the business. And so for him, that's what it took. He said, but even worse, my dad registered into the business. And at the time they were building a 3,000 square foot dream house in Ohio. And he said, in fact, they poured the foundation the day before his dad saw the business plan. And the foundation is still there because their parents put off building the dream home so they could build the business. And now it's 16 years later. And so people don't realize it because you get addicted to the love from other people. So all you can do is love on them. And there are some great resources. There's some great videos. But anything that takes a slanted – me, I would be considered super hyper dangerous. Like handing them this podcast, they're going to tell you I'm some jag bag, doesn't know what he's talking about, you know, who'd never made any money or who built it wrong. That's a great way of people explaining this. Oh, he did it wrong. Yeah, it's his fault.
Because it's safe to say that there's going to be some hate mail, some bad reviews left on the podcast and all that because there are people.
Sorry.
In these, yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. I am no stranger to that kind of stuff for my entire career, so that's cool.
One thing I would say though is if anyone is involved who's listening to me right now, is take some time to actually look at what you're getting financially. Not spiritually, not family, quote, family wise, not brotherhood wise, but it's a business. Businesses should make money or they should cease to exist. So you need to step back and actually look at it and realize, first of all, it's not your fault. You are not alone. You will make new friends when you leave the business. People don't dislike you because you built this business. They will forgive you when you ask them to forgive you because you cut them out of their lives for this opportunity. And life will go on. And you will be depressed. And you will be sad. And you will feel like it's the worst divorce you've ever gone through in your life. Because if you were in as long as I was or in as deep as I was, it's exactly what it becomes is a divorce from an entire family that turns your back on you the second you leave, but it's worth it. It'll take time. And I highly, highly suggest that you have professional help for the mental anguish you're going to go through. But it will be worth it because those dreams that they taught you are supposedly only connected and only possible through this business are very possible outside of the business. And they're very possible with legitimate businesses. And the disciplines that this opportunity taught you can be applied to other businesses. And so you're not a wasted piece of soil. You're not something that's given everything away. You can move forward and you can benefit other people's lives still. You can still bless other people. You can still do all those things you dream about. without those people who are making money off of holding you back.
Wow. It's great advice. Thank you for sharing that. And I think, it's going to be very tough for people who are in it to contemplate leaving, to really sit down and assess the situation that they're in. I know it would be incredibly difficult because it's such a machine that gets you sucked in, and to deprogram yourself from that can be very, very difficult.
Yep.
I know that this was hard for you to sort of open up. So thank you so much, David. I really appreciate you sharing your story. I think it's going to help a lot of people. And thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Anybody, if anybody's out there that is deciding to leave one of these organizations, and if they want to reach out to me, I'm on social media, David A. Pride, and all the haters, if they want to do that too, they're more than welcome to hit me up. You won't be the first, and you definitely won't be the last.